Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Tom Beal. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Susan. Well, we look out the window of our studios in downtown Ames, and we see another coating of white snow, and of course the forecasts have been pretty severe, although I think in the city it's been rather pleasant. The freezing rain that was predicted is apparently hitting elsewhere in the state and not so much in central, in our listening area. We do have a prediction that we're going to hit 40 degrees today, which will be wonderful. Not so bad on the winds either. South-southeast wind, 8 to 15 miles per hour, becoming west-northwest in the afternoon. Winds could gust as high as 21 miles per hour. A chance of precipitation is 100%. New snow accumulation of 1 to 2 inches is possible. Monday night, mostly clear with a low around 25. Southwest wind 9 to 14 miles per hour with gusts as high as 18 miles per hour. Tuesday, sunny with a high near, now get this, 46 degrees. Southwest wind, 11 to 14 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 18 miles per hour. And Tuesday night, mostly clear with a low around 22. West, northwest wind, 8 to 14 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 18 miles per hour.
Well, this is a cold day, but it's a hot topic. We're really discussing the Ames Convention Center. And here on KHOI, we have two very friendly opponents. And in fact, I didn't know how friendly they were till they both walked in the studio and started chatting like they were about to sit down for coffee after not having seen each other for 2 weeks and just having more to catch up on. Up until now, most of the informational meetings on this issue have been arranged by the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, but it's an important issue for all of us. So whether you've come to those meetings or not, we think that whatever information you have available, whether it's the Ames Trib or the ISU Daily, which doesn't have much coverage, but a little, and on an issue that we'll be discussing today about the figures that have been used. Well, one thing I really want to announce for everyone is that there's going to be a forum arranged by the League of Women Voters on Monday, February 24th in the council chambers. And usually those are televised. This is probably going to be televised. So this would be available for anybody with cable. But we have our own mini forum. We're called A Friendly Discussion of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Susan, we should point out that the issue will be on the ballot on Tuesday, March 4th. So we're right on the cusp of a decision about this big project.
That's right. And today we're going to have some of the backstory about how long the considerations of this have been underway. But now it's time to talk about who our guests are going to be. We have with us Victoria Shapinski, who not only was recently in the City Council, but has a long history with the convention business, I guess, right?
That's correct, yes. So,
and we have Sue Ravenscroft, who has been one of the most outspoken critics of this proposal.
Yes, I'm here. Hello, everybody.
And we will also have by phone two other guests, Dave Swenson, whose numbers have been in the paper a lot and whose disagreements with the Bureau are friendly but significant. And then Diane Burt, who is representing Amos Group on Affordable Housing, which is concerned about the new jobs and where the people will live.
Well, I'd like to ask Victoria Savinsky and Sue Ravenscroft, who are here in the studio, to tell us a little more about how they got involved in this issue. And since you take a positive position on the center, let's start with you, Victoria.
Okay. Well, first I want to say thank you for making this happen this morning. I think the more that we talk about it and the more opinions and understandings that we have about this project, the better we'll all be. I came to Ames. Well, actually, I have a long history in Ames, but I moved to Ames permanently in 2000 and at that time took the job of Director of Conference Services for Iowa State University. So I come with that in my pocket and an understanding of how the conference, convention, educational meetings, business impacts the city. One of the first projects, in fact, the main thing that I worked on while I was there was the writing of for the first 3-year contract for Odyssey of the Mind. And at that point in time, we figured very conservatively, I mean, there are national numbers that you can work off of how many dollars people spend in hotels and restaurants and stopping for gas and shopping downtown or wherever it is that they go. And we looked at that 3-year contract and figured that about $40 million was being brought into the community just with that one group of people. So anyway, I worked in that business for a while, and my other background is that as a member of the city council, I was appointed to the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau board and to the executive board. We had talked at that point almost at every meeting about how we had a growing need to enhance our facilities. This was something that I came to the table with a knowledge of, because even when I was doing this in the early 2000s, the flat space, if you will, that we needed was the Hilton floor, and it was becoming less and less available because of the growing use by athletics, which is probably what it was originally intended for anyway. So this has been, over the years, there have been a diminishing availability of that flat space that you need when you're bringing in a variety of different kinds of meetings to set up displays or to do, you know, any sort of larger group of people. So we then began to realize that we have to do something, because not only were our facilities aging and we were needing this larger space, other communities around the state were doing what we felt we should have been doing, which was enhancing our facilities. So when I left council, I stayed on as a member of the campaign committee. And so that's where I am today. And what brings me to feeling that we need to be moving forward on this project.
Sorry to cut you off, Victoria. Okay. I'd like to turn to Sue Ravenscroft, who is a professor of accounting in the College of Business. And I should ask you, Sue, how you became aware of the project and how you became involved in the criticism of the program.
In 2012, I received some emails from Mark North, who's the director of the Iowa State Center, and Matthew Goodman, asking me to join an ongoing committee. So I went to, I think, 3 meetings. This was the summer of 2012, and they had a lot of PowerPoint shows that they gave us each meeting. And they brought us in, or they brought me in, and I think some other community members, because they said they wanted to have people who asked questions, who represented a variety of opinions about the flat space. And I asked many questions. In fact, I still have a file of over 2 pages of questions I asked, most of which were not answered at the time, and most of which people are asking now. So this process was supposed to involve lots of people and to work things through, and I think it was a noble effort, but it needed a more disinterested, stronger party to lead it, because it was led by the very group that wanted the center. So it was sort of doomed to be one-sided. And during that process, I read a lot. I read a Brookings Institution report by Haywood Sanders, who's a professor who studies this industry extensively, has worked on it all his life. I read the CSL report. I tried to match those up with the PowerPoints I was seeing and couldn't. So I asked a lot of questions, and it seemed to me the economics the consultant brought into the table showed that this was not a winner. This was a loser. They were not going to grow much beyond where they were, even if they spent all this money. So I asked if they would talk to Dave Swenson, who's an expert in this area. And they brought him in, and he'll tell you what he did. But his numbers didn't really make the situation look any better. And then I was told I didn't have to come to any more meetings.
By the way, we didn't ask you to introduce yourself for your background like Victoria did. So.
Sure. I teach accounting, and I've been teaching governmental accounting and nonprofit accounting for the last 12 years. So during that time, I've gained a real interest in who funds what. What does the public finance? What should private industry finance? And who benefits? So this issue is right in the middle of that.
Now, you mentioned Dave Swenson. Do we have him on the phone, Dick?
Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Thanks for being with us this morning, just when we were talking about you. And Sue was just mentioning that in the initial forums and questions that you came in. Do you want to talk to Sue just a little bit?
Well, I can tell you what I did early on. Let me explain. They asked me in on this whole process to take a good look at what was called then the CSL report and the original consultants report, looking at the potential for convention center growth. And primarily what I was doing was looking at the report and seeing if there were any red flags or things that we should be worried about with regard to the consultants' procedures. What did they do? How did they do it? Is it reasonable? And then can we have some confidence in the conclusions that they drew? So what I had the opportunity to do was to read that report, look at it, and get a good sense of how they proceeded. Now, I need to say this. I thought that report was reasonably well done. They had some errors in it, and the errors were a kind of error that I oftentimes find when people try to produce economic impact reports, is they misunderstand how to use multipliers times certain types of business activity. So what I did was I reanalyzed using their information what should have been their economic impact conclusions. And then I said, well, heck, I've got my own model here. It's for the region. I buy a new model every year. I'm really good at this. Why don't I just do it using our model here that we maintain at Iowa State University of the regional economy? And so I produced a table of multipliers that would be based on new visitor spending and that you could index it to a per $1,000 worth of new visitors. And then I reported back to the committee, the group, and explained to them what I found, what the consequences of using the multiplier would be, and it's really where we left it for about a year and a half.
Then what happened?
Well, nothing really happened other than this started to move towards a vote, and we started to see some public information. And the first thing that happened was I got a call from a young reporter asking me if he could see a copy of my report because it was being cited as a source for some statistics that were part of a PowerPoint. And I looked at the PowerPoint, and I found that there were some projections being made in support of this project that had conclusions about local option sales tax, a variety of things, and then it was footnoted with the report, that short little report that I wrote, indicating that the projections came from my report. Well, they didn't come from my report. They came from the promoters of this project, and in reviewing that, I found that they had very significantly overestimated the local option sales tax yield off of this. So they subsequently mailed out a flyer as well. And the intimation was that I had produced that information, and that bothered me because I hadn't. So I complained, and we had a conversation, and we had a meeting. And at the meeting, I explained what folks had done wrong. They had misinterpreted one of the numbers that comes out of the multiplier tables. They didn't quite understand what it was and how it was to be used properly. And in so doing, they had significantly overestimated the potential local option sales tax from this new project. Now, we did something else, though, during that meeting, is because they had extraordinarily high numbers, higher numbers than were in that original CSL report in terms of the expected number of new visitors. That CSL report had indicated that perhaps as many as 14,000 or so new visitors might come to the community if we had expanded capacity. And the proponents had numbers that were closer to 65,000. And I didn't really understand how those higher numbers were developed. I still really don't understand how those higher numbers are developed and whether one should have confidence in them. But I didn't also understand why folks were advertising that there was a range of potential outcomes. We had a consultant's report that people paid good money for, and that had a value. And then we have this high-end report, and so it seems to me that there certainly should be a conversation. So during that meeting, not only did we correct their understanding of how to use the multipliers and then how to go back and reestimate the local option sales tax on the net new visitors. We also had an understanding coming out of that meeting that from that point forward, when they talked about the potential, they talk about something like the low, medium, and high estimates. And they didn't do that. And so the following Monday, I issued a little table that showed what the low-end estimates would be from the consultant's report. So that's been my involvement,
Dave,
which is primarily correcting the record.
Dave, let me jump in and ask. You see two errors. Victoria wants to comment on them. And I just wanted to ask, though, do you think these are fatal errors in the project? Are these projection errors that they were making such that the program would not succeed at Ames?
Right. The errors were such that they significantly overstated the local option sales tax. Now, the local option sales tax yield is significant and in and of itself offsets the public's costs. And so, in and of itself, overestimating the local option sales tax yield on a dollar basis overstates that relationship.
I think Victoria wants to sort out some of this, so let me ask her to step in. And I think Susan wants us to explain what CSL is.
Okay, well,
you've mentioned
it. Convention, Sports, and Leisure is what CSL stands for, and they do an ongoing studies, actually, for the local Ames Convention Visitors Bureau and other such entities around the country. And first I'm going to say, hi, Dave. I'm sorry that you and I have not had a chance to chat and to meet until now, but as part of the committee, I do want to apologize for the mistakes that were put out there. I mean, I know I looked at those slides and it didn't jump out to me. I know that anytime I go to a Convention Visitors Bureau meeting, I have sheets and sheets of numbers and graphs put in front of me, and sometimes I blur over a little bit when we get to the numbers. My understanding was that we were looking at your numbers, we were looking at the CSL study, and one was regional and you were more local, and so there was some confusion in how the numbers were presented because of that, but also the local option sales tax, I think, is still a pertinent issue in that the more sales you have in town, obviously the more dollars that are available to offset the 60% that goes towards the property tax and also what we use for community betterment, which includes human services. My understanding was we just missed those things that would be non-taxable, like groceries or...
It's more than that. It's not just that. It's that you did not, the people that applied it did not understand how the numbers that were produced from the impact.
But I think what we are missing here is the other things that the building of this project would do for the community, that it's also about what the community will use it for and how we benefit economically throughout the community. And I think we've really gotten bogged down in this concern over, whether the initial estimates were correct. I think we're actually pretty conservative most of the time because it fluctuates. I mean, some years, I was mentioning earlier Odyssey of the Mind, that brings in 15,000 people. So you have those years where you maybe even have a few of those kinds of events and other years where you don't. So everything to some degree is an estimate. But what to me it all boils down to is that we are a unique and really attractive community for bringing people in because we are Iowa State University and because one thing that we have that nobody else has is we're right in the middle of the country. And that makes us very, very attractive. We're a safe community, and those are the things that make us know that we're going to be able to continue to be strong in this kind of a business. So that's where I think we should be focusing and understanding why this is an important project, and I think we're really losing our focus here when we keep getting bogged down in these discrepancies in numbers.
I pitch in here. The issue is the public is being asked to pay $19 million. So dollars clearly matter. The economic argument clearly matters. There were other mistakes made besides the ones Dave has delineated. They combined old and new. And here's the big one. If you were to go to a bank and ask to borrow $19 million, the banker would ask you for a detailed business plan. How do you justify me lending you this money? money. How are you going to earn money to pay it back? In this case, when I ask, how do you go from 14,000 overnight visitors, and they are the ones who actually give the money to the community, to 65,000, I was told that's private information. So, yes, I was, by Mark North and Matthew Goodman. So that means that the public is being asked to give money, and that's what this vote is about. Do we give money without having good reasons, good economic reasons? We're supposed to believe a private report that says, this will help you. This will give you back the money you need, because ultimately this is about whether or not the convention center pays for itself, and it doesn't.
That's concerning that anyone would say it's private, because from the very beginning my involvement in this group has been, we will be very transparent, which is why we brought together the group that you were involved in. I remember sitting and we were putting together lists of people that we thought represented a diverse part of the community, so that we would be hearing the questions that potentially would come up and we could start answering them. So, I mean, that's very concerning, because I don't know that anybody's that I've been involved with is approaching it in that manner. But we also looked at, I mean, this isn't something that happened overnight. It sort of seems like it did because it's getting a lot of attention now. I mean, this has been ongoing for years, understanding that we have a need for it and doing these analyses. And then I just lost my train of thought. But I was going to say that, you know, as far as, first of all, well, let's talk about the loss. All convention centers lose money.
Right.
But we can estimate, because we have a number of different services that we utilize that tell us about hotel occupancy, where we've been, what our actuals are, what our projections are. We can pretty well determine what it is that our future losses will be. But that is not what it's about. It's about the monies that it brings into the entire community. And those projected losses, we can already look at those statistics that are available to us to see that we can hold monies from hotel motel tax to cover that 250, which will fluctuate, because as I said, some years we have good years, some years we don't have as many people in town, but we know based on our history what we can expect. Assuming that this thing passes on March 4th, the Convention Visitors Bureau plans to start banking money immediately. So if we put whatever monies we were looking at, we can be in the $700,000 to a million already in the bank, prepared for those first years, which might be a bit slower, because in the convention and conference business, you start planning, you know, 5-8 years in advance on where you're going to go. The other thing that I was going to say about dollars is that we're about going to the bank and asking the local community to back this project. Every other possibility, looking at how people do it around the country, how they finance these kinds of projects, some communities do it with casino money, not an option. And other communities do it with a food and beverage tax. And we tried for several years, and there's a very strong restaurant association in this state that does not want a food and beverage tax. And so we looked at different models, we looked at different options, and this was it, to bring it, be transparent, bring it to the community for a vote, let the taxpayers decide. And here we are. Otherwise, we don't have this. Otherwise, it goes away.
Could I jump in and ask a question that arose in a meeting I was at, an investment club meeting, and one of the members who I thought was financially conservative person, but who would be more supportive of this kind of project, said he didn't think he would vote for it because he could not see how this was going to benefit the individual taxpayer in the city. And I said, well, you know, communities support the construction of professional football stadiums, for example, and then have to pay a lot to get in. And he said, but you can get in if you want to buy the ticket. But how is the individual taxpayer in Ames going to benefit from this convention center? So let me throw that question at you, Victoria.
Well, because I answer this one a lot, and I've been talking about this issue for quite a while. This was actually a major topic of conversation when I was door knocking back in, whenever that was, last fall. But, you know, I think in some ways it's it seems easier to see the benefits of an aquatic center or a library and how that personally benefits you and your family. But I would make an argument that the same is true for the Scheman Center, that probably most people in this community can think of occasions where they have gone for either a business meeting or a business banquet or function, a wedding, a 4-H gathering, music, there's that band thing that they do there. I mean, there are a lot of occasions that you use Scheman, and Scheman is deteriorating, and it needs to be upgraded. And really what we're doing is we're not building something new. We're just kind of replacing what was there, which was that floor of Hilton, and adding it onto the side of Scheman and making Scheman a usable space. But I would say that there are numerous opportunities. And also, the ground floor will be available for community use. So meeting space will be available to the public. But what it brings into the community. And I use that example, though some people wonder why, is Olive Garden. You want that Olive Garden? I don't, but some people do. But this is how you get the Olive Garden. And if anybody ever watched my performance on City Council, I am not a fan of tax abatements. And I will tell you that if Olive Garden is coming or wants to come to Ames, it's almost seen as silly if you don't come in front of council and say, you know, the city should support my individual business to come and, you know, allow me to make a lot of money in your community. This is how you get an Olive Garden. Because you have a community that has enough business activity that other businesses want to locate here and that there are customers.
Well, I know Sue wants to comment, but I want to mention that you're listening to Community Radio for Central Iowa, KHOI 89.1 on your FM dial, serving Story City, Ames, and the surrounding areas. And Sue, you wanted to comment on this issue.
Yes, the ACVB gets its budget from the hotel and motel tax, which is a public tax levied by the city of Ames. The taxpayers voted to transfer most of that to the ACVB. If they have $1.4 million to set aside, we're giving them too much money. We should be spending some of it on general corporate purposes of the city. Second of all, I can't believe that business owners who are smart, who are entrepreneurial, who are creative, cannot come up with a way to pay for this if they believe it really is such a good enterprise. And I think Victoria's comments reflect a sort of back-and-forth ambivalence. Is this a business enterprise, in which case businesses should pay for it? Is it a big community center, in which case their numbers are, again, suspect because they say only 30% of the patronage is local? But if this is all for us, then why don't we just buy Edwards School and rehab it? That would be a great community center. I mean, if we're really talking about a big community center, and that's the description I sort of heard, we can all go there, we can have parties there, we can have meetings there. We're paying too much money for it. And why do they say that most of the patronage will be from out-of-town overnight visitors? I mean, you can't have it both ways.
Well, I think you can have it both ways. I mean, and it's not a community center. I mean, we have events in this town, the Mary Greeley Gala, for example, that is outgrowing any spaces that are available in our community. I mean, that would be kind of a silly event to send out of town, and it's not something that you're going to be able to set up at Edwards School. So more of the dollars that will come into I want to call it event center because I think it's more of an event center than it is a convention center, and I think we missed the boat calling it that because it's more than that. It's also those events that you go out of town to attend, like garden shows or whatever that we go to Des Moines. Those things should be happening here, but there are other kinds of events that we're losing that are university connected, that are community connected, that are looking outside of our borders because we don't have the space. So it's that big space. It's not
any standard.
Well, I'm going to weigh in conceptually. First of all, I don't know that we have events that we're losing other than by anecdote. There certainly isn't research that can point out and say
we have
the
a list.
Quantity of loss. And if the quantity of loss hasn't been quantified, which is part of the import substitution component of this. I want to go to a different place. And this has to go with that bigger argument. Primarily, the gains that are argued from this are coming on the private side. Why else would you use the economic impact multipliers? The big point to be made is that the economy and the community stands the chance of expanding because of this investment. We also know that on the off side of this, that this requires public subsidy. Now, you don't use return on investment or implicit gains to taxpayers by saying the private sector benefits because the public sector invested, unless we're very, very cautious. So when you and I have to pay more property taxes or have other kinds of local government costs, What we look for in public finance and in welfare economics, this area where we talk about benefit costs, are what are the tangible gains to the average taxpayer? It is not a tangible gain to me to say that I have access to a facility that I already had access to. So something else has to be argued, and what is the value of the gain to the community with regard to an achievable or a desired bundle of public goods? And by my observation here, that argument hasn't been made well, and I'm saying that is an argument that I think could have been made but wasn't and should have been, because that's the public goods sales component of this, is saying exactly what does the individual gain in terms of public goods. Private goods, returns to business, are not public goods. So what's the return to the community and in something more tangible than just saying access to a new facility? And so that's
but
my
I think
argument.
I made an argument that said there's more that you gain because that's how you encourage additional restaurants, for example, in the community. When you have more customers and you have more dollars in the community that are disposable for those sorts of things. And I just want to speak to two different points. And one is that we do have quantified loss. I mean, we can look at groups like Methodists, like Midwest Energy, that have come here for years and they have outgrown us. And we know that there are groups that are saying to us, we're going to have to leave because you just don't have the space for it anymore. And what we have, and we don't have access to the same thing. I mean, we have lost, and I think this is part of the message that people don't understand, is that we have lost that access to the flat space, which was Hilton. And so what we're needing to do is replace that and add it onto Sheman so that we actually have something comparable to what it was that we were able to offer years ago.
Dave, we're having a little bit of technical problems with your phone.
Oh, no.
You were doing so well when we first talked to you. I'm not sure, perhaps you're a little close to your phone. If you might try backing off a little. We were getting a little static.
Back off.
Yeah, no, you were making some interesting points, and we were getting some static on this end.
Okay.
Just a technical issue. We have another guest who wants to weigh in, but we only have one phone. So I guess what I need to know is how much more are we going to be talking about the figures? Dave, do you have some other things you...
No, I don't. I think that this argument has moved beyond the figures substantially, which is probably where it was headed anyway, and I'm more than happy to hang up.
Dave, we want to thank you very much. Your input was really good, and I think it helps to explain an issue that a lot of people have heard about, and they wanted to hear it from you directly. So thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
You bet. Goodbye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Well, we're going to move on to our other guest, and she is Diane Burt, who is a distinguished professor of food science and human nutrition, and a nationally recognized researcher on cancer prevention through diet. And she's become very interested in an aspect of this project, and that is the availability of low-income housing for a lot of the people who will work at this facility. Diane, are you on the line?
Yes, Yes, I am.
Well, thanks for taking the time to be with us. And we know you're very active in Amos, which is such an active group here in Ames and interested in so many important activities that affect our city. Could I ask how your interest in nutrition and so on led you to become involved in low-income housing issues?
That is an excellent question. Well, I've been involved in nutrition for almost 50 years. Coming out of an interest, I grew up in an agricultural area, so I kind of have that, agriculture to nutrition to human needs angle. The other aspect that impacted our family was we adopted a young man. He's now 25, several years ago, and he has brought into our home a new lens on our community. He connects with a lot of people that we hadn't connected with previously. So that probably brought me into the interest initially in Amos for youth needs. And as I've gotten involved in Amos, I've gotten very interested in other community needs. And a major community need at this point in time is housing. Now, your listeners may ask, now, how does housing relate to this new convention center? I haven't heard the numbers mentioned this morning, and I'm not really sure what the numbers are, but it has been said that new jobs might come from this convention center. That's been part of the selling point for the convention center. And the issue is Ames does not have housing for any more low-income people. And from what I've heard, the calculations are is the jobs will be in the service sector, and they'd be not very high income. So Amos's concern, or the concern that I have as a member of Amos hasn't officially developed a position on this, but the concern that I have as a member of the housing group is where, if there are new people brought into Ames to live here, to work here, where are they going to live? Our vacancy rate now is one-third of the natural vacancy rate. That means if people come in, this is for rentals. We don't have much rental. Of course, the reason is with the growth of the university, we have not added the housing that we need for the new students, so the students are putting pressure on our housing in Ames, and that's really impacting our low income.
You no doubt have thought about those issues.
I've thought about them a lot. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
Because Diane and I agree on this, and Diane was part of setting up a forum during the last campaign for council where we all met and we talked about affordable housing. But I'm not sure that it's that it negates the convention center, that this is a project that won't be built for a few years, but we need to start on figuring out how we're going to create housing in the city. We should have started a long time ago. I was at an event the other day and I was listening to Jack Hatch, and how he makes his living is he builds affordable housing. And I thought, well, what a great resource. Why aren't we talking to this man? In fact, I'm planning to, and find out how he's doing it. And, let's get some people together. I mean, I'd love to be part of a group that figures out where the land is in this community, how we can, who's going to build it, and how we can get affordable housing. We've been talking about it for a long time. Let's do it. But you know what? I don't know that it's a reason to not build this center. I mean, maybe it's an opportunity to also look for a vehicle for extra dollars to help us with housing. But, I could go a whole thing on low-income housing, but I'm on board.
And that's wonderful. I'm thrilled to hear that, but I think it needs to be part of it, not something that that will follow. I think it needs to be part of the economic analysis, mm-hmm. and if it is going to be part of what we need for the convention center, then it needs to be in the discussion. It shouldn't be that will come later.
No, I think it's part of the discussion. I think livable wages are part of the discussion. I think people, maybe I should speak for myself. I want to say yes, but to so many projects, it's yes, but. I mean, there's always a but. But I think we should be paying livable wages. But I think we should have affordable housing. But I think we should have, you know, better transport. I mean, we have great transportation, but it doesn't cover everybody that needs to be covered. You know, I think we should have a lot of things. But they're not exclusive. I mean, we can still talk about this convention center and at the same time say, yes, but we're going to support this if you pay livable wages. And the conversation continues. I also am not excited about the aesthetics of this new building. It looks like a box. So I'm saying yes, but I want us to continue talking about what this building is going to look like. And that's what I'm running into when I talk to people. It's like, yeah, I can see why it's great, but, you know, but is that a reason to just not do it at all?
Could I suggest that maybe we should say no and? No, it is ugly. No, it is too expensive. No, we don't understand the benefits. No, we're not. The hotels have not offered to pay living wages yet. When they do, let's discuss this. Let's say no now, and we will continue the conversation because there are so many issues, so many questions that have not been answered satisfactorily.
Yeah, I think it's very important that we keep our, you know, convention center as a useful resource here for the university, for the community, for the state. But I'm concerned that there are a lot of issues that haven't been addressed yet with this proposal. And housing is the one that I'm here to bring up.
You're active at Ames, as you said, and yet Ames has not taken a position on this. I don't know whether this is a fair question to toss at you, but why do you think Ames is not speaking on this issue?
Excuse me. You said Ames and you meant Amos, but we have not said what Amos was. So
right.
Maybe, Diane, could you explain
good
Amos?
Point, yeah.
Ames, amid Iowa organizing strategy?
Yeah, amid Iowa organizing strategy. It is based in many community groups and largely churches in Ames. Essentially, it's bringing up community issues and trying to find community solutions to them. And one of the current big pushes is to try to solve issues for particularly low-income youth in transportation. Kids Ride Free, you probably heard about that one. I hope you'll hear more about it in the future. And then the need for housing. So what are the big issues? A few years ago, one of the big issues in our community was not having prenatal care for low-income women. And Amos tackled that issue, and I think initially, you know, the Amos solution came up, and then I think the community eventually found other solutions. So I think that having a group of concerned and community-oriented individuals tackling community problems is what Amos is all about.
So let me come back to my question then. And again, this may not be a fair question for you, but why do you think Amos has not taken a position on the convention center?
The Amos meeting I was at last week, we actually discussed this. And I think, you know, although this discussion has been going on for a long time, it's not been a community discussion for a long time. So many of the leaders in Amos, in Ames, Iowa, many of them are connected with our churches, and this had not risen to their attention until very recently, and they just didn't have a position on it yet. And so your kind of community leaders have to have a position before the organization can jump in. I think it's just for a group like Amos, it just came up too fast.
Well, we're noticing an increasing number of comments from individuals, largely appearing in the local newspaper, the Ames Tribune. And we aren't able here at KHOI yet to receive calls from our listeners, and I'm sure that there are some with questions. So we're going to try to anticipate some of these questions by relying on some of the comments that were made in letters to the editor. And I know
now this is the question that comes up. We all know that the ISU Center is built in a floodplain. Why build more? And Herb's was, why put more concrete out there on a floodplain? And I know there's a quick little answer from the convention center. Do you want to
Well, a number of locations were considered, but this was the only one that really made sense because it needs to be an extension of the Scheman Center. We don't want to build another Scheman someplace else. The proximity to the ISU campus is crucial because it is one of the aspects that makes us desirable and unique because of the access to university residence halls. That's why we have a special NIT. The building proposal is that it's basically built on stilts, so that parking lot that is already there remains the same, but it's built up. And Scheman has been redesigned. If you remember, it used to have long windows that went to the floor. I mean, that has all been reinforced with concrete. There are other flood things that have been done in that area. So,
and the problems that Herb brings up still exist. The more we pave, the more we exacerbate the flooding problem when it happens.
But it's not more paving. I mean, it's building over the parking lot that already exists. And to look down and see your car, I mean, if that's happening, we have a lot more problems going on in the city besides the one convention that might be happening while the parking lot is flooding.
What will that do, though, to business, to future bookings? I mean, there are a lot of problems involved about when a flood happens. Has there been a contingency plan developed? I mean, floods do happen in Ames.
Oh, sure.
And they happen there. Yeah. And I actually saw the drawing extend out past the existing parking lot.
Okay, so it may be a few feet. I don't
yeah.
know. But I've written a guest commentary that is hopefully going to appear in the Ames Tribune. I kind of sums up my feelings on this issue, but also I find myself in an awkward position arguing with friends. I think we all agree, but we've agreed to disagree. And here's what I've written. I have friends on both sides of the Convention Center bond referendum debate. They are wise and thoughtful people who care deeply about our community and its future. They have solid pro and con arguments regarding a taxpayer-funded convention center. But in all the discussion about the project's economic benefits and who will and won't reap them, there is something being lost. It's the personal component, or if you will, the what's in it for me factor. When you're being asked to pay for a civic project, it's fair to consider how that project will contribute to your own life. It's easy to see the personal advantages when the bond issue is for a new library or aquatic center. Those are wonderful community assets and have much to offer current and future residents of Ames. A new convention center, in my view, does too. Ames is a welcoming community that is always ready and willing to share itself with others. It's an ingrained part of our culture, whether we are welcoming Iowa State University students, Iowa Games and Special Olympics athletes, or families who come to Ames for college sports, cultural events, and yes, conferences. We share all that our community has to offer, especially our hospitality. While many of our city's visitors utilize the Scheman Building, it is also a facility that gets significant use by Ames residents. Just about anyone who lives in Ames has had an experience in the facility. Maybe it was a work-related meeting or social event, a 4-H gathering, a high school or band competition, a wedding reception, or prom. Whatever the reason, anyone who has come in Scheman knows it's time for a better facility. We need a larger, more up-to-date facility. We need it as much as our community as for our convention business. Ames has a lot of momentum right now. We're seeing it in the growth of the research park, new school buildings, as well as the expanded medical facilities, Mary Greeley, for example, in the new primary health care clinic. As that momentum continues, the need for adequate event space, and we really should be calling this an event center because it's much, much more than conferences, will grow larger. Meanwhile, Scheman, in its current condition, will only seem to grow smaller. Without expanded event space, we will effectively be out of the conference business. Yes, events like Iowa Games and Special Olympics will still come because we have such excellent athletic facilities. But groups, whether they are planning a large business gathering or a huge wedding, will find themselves needing to seek other facilities in surrounding communities. For example, we could see job fairs that should be held in Ames go to places like Prairie Meadows and Des Moines. We will lose current and potential opportunities to share our community and the pride we take in it. Despite all the claims that the bond referendum will only benefit select businesses, it isn't a situation where we're handing a perk to a car dealership or other individual property developments. Those projects will also assets to our community have limited benefits for taxpayers. The convention center may be a boost for our hotel and restaurant industry in Ames, but it will also be a boost for our citizens who need a larger, modern, and more sophisticated facility for professional and social events. It will enhance the profile of our community as well as the businesses looking to locate here. In other words, if you want that Olive Garden restaurant in Ames, this is a much more equitable way to make it happen rather than the inevitable request for a tax abatement. I will be voting yes on March 4th, and not solely for the economic benefits of an expanded convention space. Primarily, I will be voting out of a sense of community pride, out of a desire to see Ames continue to show itself off and continue to offer its citizens a facility that, like a library or aquatic center, they can feel a part of and take pride in. And if Ames taxpayers come out in support of this project, it will be totally appropriate to expect something in return from the business community, like paying employees livable wages.
And Sue, I don't think you've written your guest commentary yet, but I think you probably have some concluding remarks as well.
I do. The proponents who urge that we vote for this have three basic arguments. The first is an economic one, but they talk about the benefits, but they go primarily to private business, to hotels, motels, and restaurants. The public is being asked to fund this. That's somewhat unusual, and we're being asked to fund it several ways. The first obvious one is through increased property taxes. The other way that we're asked to fund it that might not be so obvious is that we, the public, voted to impose a hotel and motel tax, and we, the public, voted to give it to the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. So when they say they are covering any potential losses, it's actually we, the public, who are paying those potential losses. So the economics have a lot of problems. The second argument for it is that it creates jobs. The number of jobs has been highly disputed. It's probably lower than the proponents say, but all of the jobs will be low-wage jobs, and most of them will be in hotels, motels, and maybe some restaurants. We have lots of questions about where those people would live. The Ames Group is concerned about that. So are other people. Finally, when faced with difficulties talking about the economics, the proponents then switch to a sort of local pride issue and say that we will use this. We, the people of Ames, will use this over and over and over again. But their own PowerPoint shows that currently local visits are only 30,000. In a town of 60,000 people, that means half of us go once a year. With the expanded convention center, they're saying there will be 60,000 local visits. That means each of us would go on average once a year. I still think 19 million city public dollars and 20 million state public dollars is too much to pay for one visit per year per Ames citizen. Thank you. I will be voting no, by the way.
And it's important to announce that there will be a League of Women Voters sponsored forum in the Ames City Council chambers next Monday, February 24th at 7 p.m. The speakers will be Julie Weeks from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, Steve Shanker, City Manager, Warren Madden, representing ISU, and Dave Swenson, Economist. You can watch it on cable if you can't make it to the council chambers.
This is KJY Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Our program today was about the Ames Convention Center, which will appear as a bond issue on Tuesday, March 4th.
Our guests today were Victoria Sierpinski, Sue Ravenscroft, Dave Swenson, and Diane Burt. And your hosts today were Susan Franzen and Tom Beal. Local Talk is engineered by Richard Morrison. Our theme music is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And see listings of our past guests and resource contact information, as well as other resources mentioned in our shows. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends.
And consider becoming one of the 500 families donating $20 per month or $250 per year to help us meet our operating expenses. We'd appreciate your feedback either by phone at 515-292-2878 or by email at khoiradio@gmail.com with news in the subject line.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or at the email khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening and
see you again on the radio.